Day after day, you dip down into our world to stir among the dark furrows of our making, among the silent stalks, and among the seeds unborn, until Earth itself is lifted out of its great weight of brokenness by your clear voice that shakes awake the seeds like beads of light and makes them grow. My soul is a candle that burns away the veil. My soul is a candle that burns away the veil. My soul is a candle that burns away the veil. In the furrowed sod. There do I dwell, in weakness and in power, not broken or divided, says our God. In your straight garden plot I come, about your porch my vine, meek, fruitful, doth intertwine and waits at the threshold love's appointed time. I come in little things, says the Lord, yes, on the glancing wings of eager birds, the softly pattering feet of furred and gentle beasts. I come to meet your hard and wayward heart in brown bright eyes that peep from out the brake. I stand confessed on every nest where feathery patience is content to brood and leaves her pleasure for the highest emprise of motherhood. There does my godhood rest. I come in little things, says the Lord. My starry wings I do not forsake, love's highway of humility. Meekly I fit your stature to your need. Beggar's part about your gates, I shall not cease to plead, as human, to speak with human, till by such art I will achieve my immemorial plan beyond the low lintel of the human heart.
Yeah.
Day after day, you dip down into our world to stir among the dark furrows of our making, among the silent stalks and seeds unborn, until the earth is lifted out of its great weight of brokenness by your clear voice that shakes awake the seeds like beads of light and makes them grow. Last year, when we looked at the native world, earth-based spirituality on this continent and across the world, we studied this medicine wheel mandala that was a very strong part of the teaching of the spirituality of native spirituality, and we looked at it in a lot of different ways. Try to see it through the eyes of the native tradition. One of the things that was clear about the medicine wheel is that at the center of it was a tree. A tree that was growing up out of the center of flatland into vertical space. So the metaphor that the native world was using for the vertical dimension was the great tree of life, which in fact is exactly the same metaphor for the Kabbalah. Different takes on what the tree means, how it works, and how we relate to that tree, but the native world and the Hebrew world, which seem like they're continents apart, and they are not apart from the position of perennial wisdom. They see the same thing. And what is really abundantly clear is that the tree of life diagram in the Hebrew world matches the tree of life diagram in the native world. So the two are in fact comparative or comparable systems of thought, although they use different symbol systems and different ways of speaking about how that tree of life operates. But the tree of life is the term for the Kabbalistic image that is at the center of this. So these images all work together. And it's interesting that you can do cross-comparative symbolism, and it's
it's just abundantly clear that this is a universal symbol. So before we look at some images, I want you to read this. And this is a compilation, and I don't know that we've used it. Maybe we have. About the Tree of Life image, taken from Native Worlds. And just pass whatever you don't have back. So here is a theological, mythological, spiritual, metaphysical explanation from the Native world of the sacred tree and two voices speaking. Would somebody read one paragraph and then somebody pick up the second paragraph and the third paragraph, the fourth paragraph, and then somebody read the full circle, sacred circle. So somebody start with the first.
For all the people of the earth, the Creator has planted a sacred tree under which they may gather and there find healing, power, wisdom, and security. The roots of this tree spread deep into the body of Mother Earth. Its branches reach upward like hands praying to Father Sky. The fruits of this tree are the good things the Creator has given to the people, to the people's teachings?
I'm not sure.
That show the path to love, compassion, generosity, patience, wisdom, justice, courage, respect, humility, and many other wonderful things.
The ancient ones taught us that the life of the tree is the life of the people. If the people wander far away from the protective shadow of the tree, if they forget to seek the nourishment of its fruit, or if they should turn against the tree and attempt to destroy it, great sorrow will fall upon the people. Many will become sick at heart. The people will lose their power. They will cease to dream dreams and see visions. They will begin to quarrel among themselves over worthless trifles. They will become unable to tell the truth and to deal with each other honestly. They will forget how to survive on their own land. Their lives will become filled with anger and gloom. Little by little, they will poison themselves and all they touch.
It was foretold that these things would come to pass, but that the tree would never die. As long as the tree lived, the people lived. It was also foretold that the day would come when the people would awaken, as if from a long, drugged sleep, that they would begin timidly at first, but then with great urgency to search again for the sacred tree.
The knowledge of its whereabouts and of the fruits that adorn its branches have always been carefully guarded and preserved within the minds and hearts of our wise elders and leaders. These humble, loving, and dedicated souls will guide anyone who is honestly and sincerely seeking along the path leading to the protecting shadow of the sacred tree.
Okay. So there's Native people talking about the vertical axis as a tool of awakening. As clear as a bell. And then Black Elk, a great Native elder who lived and died in the last century, wrote the final piece. Someone read that.
You have noticed that everything an Indian does is in a circle. And that is because the power of the world always works in circles, and everything tries to be round. In the old days, all our power came to us from the sacred hoop of the nation. And so long as the hoop was unbroken, the tree flourished. The flowering tree was the living center of the hoop, and the circle of the four corners nourished it. The east gave peace and light, the south gave warmth, the west gave rain, and the north, with its cold and mighty wind, gave strength and endurance. This knowledge came to us from the outer circle with our religion. Everything the power of the world does is done in a circle. The sky is round, and I have heard the earth is round like a ball, and so are the stars. The wind, in its greatest power, whirls. Birds make their nests in circles, for theirs is the same religion as ours. The sun comes forth and goes down again in a circle. The moon does the same, and both are round. Even the seasons form a great circle in the changing and always come back again to where they were.
Just, you know, beautiful, straightforward seeing and awareness that there are powers and images and symbols that are absolutely universal in proportion. So I want to take you through a walk just to verify that this is true. And I want to start with this image. And let's cut the light. I think it's the middle one. Just pick it up. Yeah, good.
Mm. Wow.
So, how about that being the great sacred tree? An image of that. And I have a great sacred tree on our land that we love and we come to. It's, it looks a little different from this, but it's about that big. And it has a... Okay, when we start with this image of something this majestic and this beautiful, we must remember that it started with that. It has to be remembered that that was in a collection of that. And those were just little scattered bits and fragments and beings on the ground, and they began to do that. They began to self-destruct. So we get from there, that beginning the start, to there. And that image, this great symbol of the sacred tree, becomes a stable universal pattern that is seen in all the great sacred traditions. So I would like for you to understand that the Jewish world took that tree and made it into a sacred image, which actually is that. So the menorah in the Hebrew world is, in fact, the image of the tree as the radiance of light. It is the place from which the light comes. It's the place that fills our world with light. And you can see these various images of the menorah being the great central sacred tree with the branches to the right and to the left. And so here is the way it eventually evolves as a symbol system in the Hebrew world. The tree, the roots, the branches, and then to the left, the traditional Kabbalistic image of the Sefirot, they're called, the tree of life, which eventually looks like that, which are the chakra points of the Hebrew world. So we're kind of, you know, okay, there's relationships between these images, and they relate across traditions. What's really fun is to say, if you think of the tree of life, literally within the phylogenetic systems of botany and biology, you are there. And so this tree is all of the, it's the relationships between all of the systems of life, biological, and you are in the animal part, and there is where you are. So when you see yourself within the totality, you say, okay, I'm part of the great tree, but just a sliver of the great tree. It's interesting to see it from that particular position. But just to remind you, I think the gods and goddesses came down and laid this in the field just for our benefit. But way before we all got started, that's back at the dawn of Western civilization, Sumerians put at the center of their imagery this tree of life. So it's been in existence 5,000-6,000 years at least, and we begin to see this image. The Persians picked it up, and they put it in all kinds of diagrams. They put it in their bas-reliefs. They put angels around it. Yes, those are angels right and left. And this is Ahura Mazda at the top in both cases, the god of wisdom, the winged god of wisdom, who is over the tree of life, and humans and angels pay attention to that tree of life. Well, the Egyptians believed it too. And there is an image of the tree of life within Egyptian culture, used and painted and in the way that the Egyptians wanted to deal with it, the way they thought about how the angels in winged formed served it. And this comes down to us today in Persian rugs, both from the Zoroastrian tradition and somewhat from the tradition of the Egyptians, but maybe not so much that, but you can see it's universal. So you will, if you buy rugs, you're going to always find a huge group of them about the tree of life. So it's in the culture, it's in the history, it's in the tradition. And these are Indian and Persian and Turkish and rugs that have the tree of life in them. But if you want to jump over to this continent, the Mayans had the same image. And you can go from petroglyph to petroglyph carvings across the Mayan and the Aztec and the Inca world. And they have these images. I believe that one is Aztec, and I believe this one is Inca. No, I'm sorry, this is Mayan. And there's the tree of life. I saw that, or one very similar to it, down in Guatemala. And it was just an amazing thing to see this tree flowering and budding. And you jump back across, and you have this image in the ancient Vedic tradition. And you have it in the Mexican world, mm-hmm. and you have it in the Christian world. Mm-hmm. So this tree is adorned by wisdom figures, all across the various tradition. That's India. There's the tree of life in the Indian world. There's Ganesha at the bottom of the tree, the great root of Ganesha, being feeding the tree and the tree living. And another Indian image of the tree of life. That's a Buddhist image with trees on either side of the Buddha and the great tree of life blooming up above his head. And remember, he was enlightened under the tree. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is that the right way? Yeah. That's a Taoist image of the tree of life. It's usually a gnarly tree or a flowering tree. So these images are absolutely universal. They are standard images across the world. And I wanted you, two more. This is again a Taoistic inspired, perhaps Zen Buddhist painting. And this one is back to just an amazing image with Kabbalistic, Christian, and Islamic aspects to it. So this is sort of our tradition saying this image of the tree of life fits almost in every single part of our tradition. So I wanted to prove that the tree of life image was everywhere. It was universal. It's our image. It's one that informs us. So this afternoon we're going to spend some time with this image because Kabbalah is a received treasury of wisdom about this image. It is this image taken and used by the great sages of Jewish mystical tradition to say, you need to know when you're entering the vertical axis what it's like to move down that axis and move up that axis. Or we're going to build you a ladder so that you can move up and down the axis of the tree so that you can go from branch to branch to branch. So they made a special work through several thousand years of exploring the vertical axis using the tree of life image and the divine sephirot. Now, we're going to spend time this week, next time we gather, out of that teaching came something called alchemy. You could blame the Jewish world for alchemy as well. And out of alchemy came Tarot. And this is the oldest, that's the next oldest, and this is the youngest. Although they have roots back all the way to the Egyptian and the Greek and the Zoroastrian world. So you can see the image starts with the Kabbalistic tree of life. And the tree of life is the way they symbolize the Kabbalah. The tree of life is a ladder. And the ladder is made of steps in the ladder. And the ladder's steps are called, the steps of the ladder are called sephirot. So that is sort of the way we get to this topic. Now, this is an artistic image, and I wanted you to have something more than that. When you start with the ancient beginnings of the sephirot, you probably need to go all the way back to Persia. You need to go back to the experience of the Hebrew people encountering lots of different systems and traditions, but they eventually came up with this ladder form, this very interesting ladder form that they called the sephirot, and that sephirot became this image at first. It was probably in the time of Jesus. It looked more like that. Jesus talks about the five trees of paradise. If you get to know them, you will not know the taste of death. That's in the Gospel of Thomas. It's Logian 19, I think. Logian 19 says, Yeshua says, if you get to know the five trees of paradise, you will not know the taste of death. So he's using the tree image, he's using the sephirot image, he's using the idea of there's a vertical axis, and eventually it comes to be looked at like this, and my favorite image is this one. So we're going to keep that up for a little while, and have us try to understand as much as we can about that particular image, because it is, in fact, the fundamental image that I think that we can make sense of and work with. So if you'll notice in this image, there is a threesome here, and that three set image is it starts with the crown, this is called the crown, and then on one side is Bina and the other side is Chokhmah. And Bina is understanding and Chokhmah is wisdom. But the flow in the tree goes this way. And so the flow downward, the arc downward, takes a certain pattern. And in the Kabbalistic world, it starts in what is called the infinite or the it's really indefinable. So if you move above the crown, you're in the world of the infinite, which cannot be actually said. It's beyond our speaking, beyond our saying. But as the infinite begins to manifest, it manifests, and if you thought of the chakra system, it manifests in the crown chakra. So there's a really interesting parallel between Hinduism and Judaism, and you can see, oh, people are picking up on, because this is a human. See the human? This is the primordial human. This is the human that existed in the layers of those circles at the very top, coming from the source. So we came from this tree. We have been birthed into the kingdoms of the earth, and that's number 10. And so we came down the ladder from the source into space-time to do our work in space-time, and we will return, says this tradition, back up the ladder, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 4, 3, 2, 1. That's the way we will return. We will return up the tree of life. We will climb the tree of life. Now, how we climb the tree of life and how it came to be is a huge body of teaching called the Zohar. And the Zohar came into existence in the Middle Ages and the Jewish world, and it came into existence in France, Provence, France. But way before it came into existence, the Jewish mystics were teaching the Tree of Life. They were teaching how to access the Tree of Life. And the point was that while we lived on Earth, we could draw down from these various centers of energy into our own experience the wisdom that was in those pieces or parts of the tree. That those were centers of energy. They were swirling centers of energy that we could draw down into our being. So a sage or a mystic had access to the tree. Here's another term. They could take the chariot ride up into the tree. So the Merkaba was the ability to climb the tree or to draw down from the tree into this world. So you think of a shaman who is able to draw down power into this world, that the Jewish tradition said, by the time you're 40, you're probably able to start to climb the tree. Huh. So if your mind and your heart is prepared, you could begin to work along this axis, and you could begin to climb this tree. So that's the background, a little bit of the history. I don't want to give you too much detail on this, but I do want to give you the first chapter, the introduction to Daniel Matt's book. And Herman, I think, looked, and Alice looked at a video. No, it was Gary and Jenny. You looked at a video last night of Daniel Matt talking about this. Did he explain this tree?
On YouTube.
No.
Okay. All right. So he didn't, but probably somewhere he does.
There were a lot of them, though.
Yeah.
I mean, there were like, I don't know.
So Daniel Matt teaches at the University of California in Berkeley. And so I took the opportunity, and the only difficulty with this is the staple's on the wrong corner. But the lady at the staple shop was having some difficulty with the staple machine. And so I'm going to issue those orders, and then would you just continue passing these out until everybody has one? Well, mine might have locked. So you have almost everything you need to kind of give you a sufficient amount of information. But the reason that we're going over this in this particular detail is because for a sage, you need some tricks in your magician's bag. You need the ability to use things that are available to you. And this system of Kabbalah says that if you have access to the vertical axis through meditation, and it's going to think about it here, through the kind of meditation that we do, you're actually climbing the tree every day and you're bringing fruit, you're plucking fruit from the tree. So you got images here to work with. Imagine that meditation is a kind of Merkava experience that allows you to go up the tree and then you reach and you grab for things that you need. Now, the interesting part of this image is that this is the mother and father principle coming from the Godhead, from the divine. the left hand and the right hand. Left-handed and right-handed divine energies. We're going to come to it in here. But at the top of the left-handed energies, depending to our right, but if you're the person, it's your left hand, you have the wisdom energies. And on the right hand, you have the understanding energies, in which there is something right here called strength or gevura or judgment. Power, deen, rigor, red, left arm, judgment. Okay? Now, you say, oh, judgment, you've got to get rid of that. And we've been talking about compassion, we've been talking about love, but what about judgment?
Discernment.
Okay, there's a good word, discernment. That's a great word. Charles, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that's a good way to say it.
Okay, so have you ever practiced tough love? Yes. You do it with rigor. You do it with discernment. You do it with a kind of, okay, this is necessary. I have to practice tough love. That's this side. This is compassion, and this is discernment or tough love. So, a wise person has to exercise both and not let one or the other. If you have all judgment, you've lost. If you have compassion and never any rigor, you've lost. Carol.
Well, in our School of Wisdom at St. Mark's, we're doing a class using a theological reflection method. And there are categories. One of them is judgment, and we've spent a lot of time talking about what that means. And I think it's my favorite definition is to say that it's that which wakes us up to what's gone wrong.
Boy, that's a great way of talking about it. So there is men and women of wisdom getting together and saying, let's explain why this is so critical on the tree. So it's an awakening to that which has gone wrong. It's in the other that I gave this morning, it's pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. You know, what's wrong with the pattern? Why were these knots in the pattern? Okay, so I want you to just discern right and left-handed aspects to the tree, and then the central trunk. So you have branches on the left, branches on the right, they balance one another, and then you have the central trunk that goes down through. What's really interesting in the middle of this great tree is beauty. That central image holds the tree together. And the more you ponder that, you go, the beautiful is actually capable of holding together both rigor and discernment and what we might say is ultimately judgment, right discernment about things, and absolutely unconditioned love and acceptance. Beauty can do both. And that's a kind of balancing act that is held right at the center, and the Jewish mystics said, if you work with this tree, you will discover that. Okay, so look at these four, in the middle of which is beauty. The four are judgment, grace or unconditional love, chesed on the right, hod and netzach, and they are prophecy and, I'm going to put another word in there, synchronicity or serendipity. Eternity and splendor, Netzach and Hod, these are elements in the tradition of being able to work with time prophetically. Now, it'll take a little bit for us to get, but when we come to Tarot, we'll be working with that. So how do we work with synchronicity? How do we work in such a way that we're working with synchronicity and not against it? How do we create our future? How do we create prophecy? It's as though we could actually be prophetic, and we could work with the prophetic element. So these are really interesting, and in the Jewish world thought a lot about those energies. Those energies are available to us. So a shaman can work with time in an interesting way, work with synchronicities in an interesting way. I would dare to say that Alison Herman worked with that gentleman that came into their lives in a synchronistic way. They used Hesed in that particular combination. They used unconditional love and acceptance in a condition that produced a kind of touch with splendor and eternity, and they used it serendipitously in the world of time, where things, you know, sometimes they seem synchronous and sometimes they seem out of sync. What's that about? That's another interesting question. Okay, these four, with the five in the middle, are called the five trees of paradise. So in Thomas, when Jesus says, if you get to know the five trees of paradise, you will not taste death, he's referring to those. Now, in the Jewish world, these first three were at one layer, these next three were at another layer, 9 was at another layer, and 10 was at another layer, and we're down here in flatland. And in the way that the Jewish world talked about it, those five were the trees of paradise, the tree of paradise. So if you get to know, if you can reach those levels and pull down beauty and pull down right discernment, and you can pull down unconditional love, and you can pull down synchronicity and serendipity, and you can work with prophecy and work with time. Whoa, you've got real power. You've got real strength. And then you use it, and these are really interesting. That is the phallus, and this is the womb, the birthing canal. So, and these come in an order. They come down the tree this way. So there's a lot of symbolism here that, you know, they said, shh, you got to be 40 to understand this. So they worked with it that way. So I went through this first introduction to a glimpse of the orchard. And what's really interesting, again, is that the Jewish world thought that each one of these were this within this. So they replicated, like a fractal image, they replicated the whole tree here, 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 and here. So this is an orchard. It's an interesting way. So that the Sephirot was contained in each fruit or each center of activity. So the Jewish world said a good shaman can work up and down this tree, can draw fruit out of this tree, can draw power out of this tree, can use this tree in daily life. So when we saw these images, which you really liked, that's it. And notice what's at the center. So there is the standing up in the furrows of life, and the seed being cast in the furrows of life, and us working on the flat land, but beginning to stand up into our capacity to draw energies from the tree of life. That's what that image is about. It's the ability to do that. It's an amazing thing that our world, Jesus himself, lived in that capacity. It started with these understandings, but then it quickly moved to this. So this image is the one I typically stick with to help me understand and keep me aware of what is available to me, above me, from which my being comes. That's the point.
Ben?
Yes.
Have you spoken yet? Or I missed it? Of the middle one, of the top four?
This is called that, yeah. And it's not something that is easily explained.
What's it called?
That. D-A-A-T-H. But I'm not... It's an awareness that all those lines crisscross there, and it's kind of a ghost figure in this image.
Sometimes it's sort of a dotted line.
It's a dotted line, that's right. It's kind of a ghost image, and I'm not an expert at the Tarot. I've tried to spend, of the Kabbalah, I've tried to spend as much time as I can, but I'm going to have us look at some statements that are made by Daniel Matt, who is an expert and who has spent a lot of time in this world. So let's take page one, introduction, and look at Kabbalah, and understanding the first paragraph that he calls the third line, this he calls the ancient wisdom that is the treasury of the Jewish world. And what's really interesting in the next line, he says it's the treasury, but if one is truly receptive, this wisdom appears spontaneously and unprecedented, taking you by surprise. So he says, yes, this is ancient, this is a treasury, this is something that you may or may not have in your toolbox, but if you start to pay attention to it, guess what? Spontaneously, this wisdom will appear in your world. And then about three lines down, he calls this new ancient words. He juxtaposes them. New ancient words. And then about four lines down, for example, he says, this is the world that is coming.
Constantly
coming. Constantly, three lines down from there, a world that is constantly coming, constantly flowing, a timeless dimension of reality available when?
Right
here and now, if one is what?
Receptive.
Exactly. So, it's real interesting that the Gospel of Philip starts out the very first thing it wants you to know in the Gospel of Philip, which we will be looking at this summer. It says, the whole purpose of the Gospel of Philip is to make you receptive. And the Gospel of Philip, as we will be talking about, is a book of alchemy. It's a book of alchemy. Amazing alchemical images. So, to become receptive is the work of alchemy so that you can what? Access the Tree of Life. Now look in the next paragraph. The tradition of mitzvot, I'm not going to spend time trying to explain all the terms in Jewish tradition, but the secret of fulfilling the mitzvot is the mending of all the worlds and the drawing forth of the emanations from above. So remember we said that we were each a fragment of our full self. So the idea is that you draw down from the tree into the world so that you can bring fullness to the fragment. Or at the very bottom of the line it said, God is not static, but dynamic becoming. And if you turn the page, and I know you have to do the other way, and get the back, look at this line. This is not Christian theology. It's going to shock the hell out of most Christians. God remains incomplete and unrealized. It is up to us to actualize the divine potential in the world. God needs us. Isn't that amazing?
Is that different from what Teresa said?
Probably not. What did she say?
St. Teresa said, we are the hands of God.
Yeah. So, in this world, God is becoming. And we are the main becomers for God.
Becomers.
Process theology.
It is process theology. That's right. So then the next paragraph starts, the Kabbalah owes its success to this piquant blend of tradition and creativity, loyalty to the past and bold innovation. The Kabbalist grew adept at walking the tightrope between the worlds of blind fundamentalism on the one hand, mystical anarchy on the other. So these were bold people, and he points out that the Kabbalists were pretty good at keeping secret things that would have gotten them killed otherwise. So this was secret knowledge in a certain way, and other people got killed. And he lists Halaj in Islam, Meister Eckhart in Christianity, and of course Jesus, who got, you know, lime blasted because he was drawing out some of these secrets. Down at the, almost at the bottom, the last paragraph, he says, this is mystical teaching that comes from the Garden of Eden. So the belief is that what we're having access to is to what Adam and Eve knew but lost or forgot. We're recovering at the very end of that page the primordial tradition. Sophia Perennis. Why? To regain cosmic consciousness, messianic consciousness. He goes on to explain about the seeing of God and so forth and so on in the next page, the next
Before
paragraph.
Before you go on, it really struck me when I saw the last piece of that sentence you just read.
Without renouncing
Without
the world.
Renouncing
good,
the
good. I'm glad you point that out. So, you're going to find, I'm just giving you nuggets, little jewels that are in this that I want you to find. On the next page, 3, at the bottom of the long paragraph, he says, on the throne is a figure with the appearance of a human being surrounded by the radiance like a rainbow. This is taken from Ezekiel. The image of the throne. And so in the vision of Ezekiel, you have the beginnings of the Kabbalah. You have the beginnings of the image of the Kabbalah and the chariot which moves up and down. And if you'll move to the next page, at the very top of page 4, he says there are secret passwords for going up and down the tree. At the various, it's sort of like in Buddhism, at the various gates are demons that want you to give the secret password before they'll let you pass through. You go, that's really awkward. What is that about? Well, look at Thomas Logian 5. If you're traveling and not clear where you're traveling. If you're traveling and you are asked, where do you come from? Say, give them the secret password. Mm-hmm. So this image of the secret password is in fact in the teachings of Jesus. And these are heavenly palaces. These are palaces. I go and prepare palaces, places for you, Jesus says in John chapter 14. And this is then in the next paragraph. It's dangerous. However, you are invited into the divine orchard or paradise from which this teaching comes. So it's again relating it back to where we came from, the land of paradise. Yeah, go ahead and turn it on. The land of paradise. And there are two streams of tradition. And he talks about them on the last, on page 3, he talks about Ma'aseh Merkava and Ma'aseh Bereshit. And those are just two mystical streams of teaching from this tradition. He says on page 5, at the end of the first paragraph, this Sephirot evolved to become this. So it started out with Ezekiel way back, and then it evolved to become this. So somewhere in the stream of teaching that Jesus was a part of, Jesus knew many of these images and used them in his teaching, it evolved. The full 10 Sephirot was probably not a part of Jesus' teaching because it had not yet sort of fully formed. But this tradition, it grew and grew and grew and became spontaneous. It kind of, there was spontaneous combustion and it kind of burst into it. And so then in the next part, he talks about where, in fact, this started, this full form was given expression as the Zohar. And you just need to know that that's a part of it. But in the middle of that paragraph, he says, the ten Sephirot now appear as lights, as powers, as attributes, or divine potencies described in Gnostic literature, but they are the stages of God's inner life. Wonder if you're looking at divine psychology. This is the Enneagram of the divine. Okay? There's 10. Yeah, there's 10. For us, there's 9. Imagine this is the Enneagram of the divine. You say, oh, I want to know what God, I want to know the personality of God. That's the personality of God. That's the inner dynamics of God. So you're getting introduced to God as manifest, and you come from that. You come from that. The stages of God's life, or the divine personality. Imagine that you might have a personality test on God. And you'd come up with this Enneagram-like image. I'm just trying to give you, you know, chakra systems, Enneagram, you know, the psychosocial dynamics of God, your own roots, where you came from. You were born out of this tree. You can have access to this tree. This is where Adam and Eve came from. They came from the five trees of paradise. It's the Jewish way of saying, you have access to this garden. Enter it. And then Islam will pick up the word, and Rumi will talk about enter the garden. Ever heard? Enter the garden. Rumi will just say it over, enter the garden. See, Islam is paying attention to this. And then you see in a Persian rug, the tree of life. Oh, you mean, yes, we mean. They've been talking about that. So, this is just a quick overview, but I want you to turn to page 7. The very top of the page, it says, the text of the Torah is simply the starting point. It's a springboard for the imagination. What is that called in the Jewish tradition?
The law.
We look at the text of the Old Testament as rigid, and this is inviting us to use our imagination. So I've been doing that.
Isn't that Midrash?
It's Midrash. There you go. It's Midrash. So the springboard for the imagination, use your imagination as you navigate the tree. Think of chakra system, think of Enneagram, think of MMPI, think of INTJ, ESPN. No.
Myers-Briggs.
Thank you. Yes, David.
What's Midrash?
Midrash means the use of the imagination to see what's behind the letters of the law. Okay, that's a big topic in the order because we are hoping to become good interpreters of the Oriental texts that we inherit.
It typically means a discussion now.
It what?
Typically means a discussion.
Oh. Huge discussion.
Huge discussion.
And yeah, even
more and more, a longer and longer.
Yeah, yeah, longer and longer discussions. That's right.
What about mitzvah?
Mitzvah means points of the law.
Mitzvah is the point of the law.
I didn't want to get into it.
they were talking about a good deed.
A good deed. Yeah, a mitzvah. But then he says, look, the mitzvah, the good deed, where does he say it? I passed it up and now I can't find it again.
First page.
Okay, the mitzvah, yeah. The mitzvah is really to mend the world. To bring back the sparks. That's brought up in here again a little bit later. So all of this, he says in the middle of page 7, streams out of the infinite, the endless. And above this is God beyond God. This is the God part that we can understand. This is the personality of God, the enneagram of God, the chakras of God, out of which you come and I come. But God is beyond God. God is beyond this. So Jewish mystical tradition wants you to know that and talks a lot about that. But then on page 8 begins the explanation. So the first sefirah, first paragraph, is the crown. It is the crown of the head. It is the primordial you. You get that? Meaning, you came from this great vast body of humankind that was produced by the divine, because the divine says the human is the temple of God. Huh. So this is the divine temple, which is us. And God's personality is written into us. It just suffuses us. So at the top is the image of the primordial human. It's the divine archetype. It's that same line says the mythical paragon of human being. It's our original nature. Another difference is that it's the cosmic tree growing. And watch this. The roots are in heaven and the tree's growing downwards. So this gets real. It's sort of like this. Okay, that's the way we try to understand it. But wonder if it was this one. Okay, so this would be heaven and the tree is growing down to the earth. And you put another flat land down here. You'd put heaven up here, and you take this away, and you put it down here. So the tree would be growing and hanging down. The roots are in the divine mind, and drawing from the divine mind, and then is producing fruit all the way down, and drops the fruit into earth. Isn't that interesting? So, it'll be Jewish mystical tradition will upset the tree. Says, oh, you like the tree that way? Well, look at it this way. So that's imagination. See, it doesn't want you to get stuck. Okay, you like that image? Okay, we'll reverse it.
Do they ever take that top section and then say, okay, this is, and then cross it off with, okay, this is flatland and this is where you're...
I don't know. Use your imagination.
Just reading the second part of that chapter where we get into Chokmah and Binah.
Binah, yeah.
And Binah being the divine mother and giving birth to everything that lies below.
Yes, exactly. So that's Sophia. So when we said, we used Sophia as the word, Jewish tradition would use Binah. So Chokmah is the spark of wisdom and Binah is the womb that holds it, the understanding that holds it, and births then what? This. These five trees. And she is the totality of, it says at the end of that third paragraph, she is the totality of all individuation. Meaning all individuals, including me, have been birthed by her, and she thought of us as she was pregnant with us. So imagine Sophia being pregnant with you.
He's saying all of that is in us.
Yes. That's the truth. So it's just, we came from that, and all of it is in us. The tree is in each part, and the genetics, the divine genetics, is in every human. So it's just, you want to know yourself, well, you've got to know your divine enneagram. You got to know the divine chakras. Say, we like India because they got chakras, and we don't. Oh, bowl! We got a whole system of chakras.
That's in that Lojion 3, is it?
2.
It's in the birds.
Oh.
The birds in the air, the fish in the sea.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's inside,
3.
It's out you, outside.
Yeah.
Until you're known, your true self, you won't be known.
Well, why don't you read it? Just shut up and read. Let's see. If I shut up and find it.
I have it.
Okay, read.
Yeshua says, if your spiritual guides say to you, look, the divine realm is in the sky, well then the birds will get there ahead of you. If they say it is in the sea, then the fish will precede you. No, divine reality exists inside and all around you. Only when you have come to know your true self will you be fully known. Realizing at last that you are a child of the living one. If, however, you never come to know who you are a poverty-stricken being, and it is yourself which lies impoverished.
Okay, perfect. So if, all of you is in the sea. No, all of you is in the sky. No, all of you is this. Karen, they always think of that as demonic. I don't know.
Demonic.
That's coming out, though.
That's in the tradition.
I'm releasing it.
Are you?
Bringing it around. Yeah.
All right.
You appreciate it.
So, these three sephirot, that paragraph on page 8, about the middle paragraph or a little bit further down, is Keter. Chokhmah, Binah represents the head of the divine body and are considered more hidden, and she gives birth to Hesed and Gevura, love and power, known as judgment. And Hesed and Gevura are the right and left arms of God, the free-flowing love and the strict judgment and limitation. For the world to function properly, both are essential. Ideally, a balance is achieved, and where is the balance? In beauty. Isn't that amazing? Called also rahamin, or compassion. If judgment is not softened by love, it lashes out and threatens to destroy. Here lies the origin of evil, called sitra ahasra, the other side, and from a more radical perspective, evil originates in divine thought. And this is, the demonic is rooted in the divine. The last line.
Amen. The tarot has that too. The devil is the
good.
The shadow of the Lord.
Yeah.
Have you related these to Nasser? You remember our wonderful book by Nasser and his predecessors and the basic truth and beauty? And
right. And they are in this. This is in the Islamic tradition. Real deep in the Islamic
tradition. Because there's a difference in love and compassion.
Rahman or Rahim.
You know,
yeah.
And what's more ultimate.
Right. So there's a discussion to be had by all of us, you know. As we start to assimilate this kind of material. But this is the world that we live in. This is the world of spirit. This is the world not so much of the mind, but it's the world of the heart. We're in and out of this tree. We're tapping beauty. We're tapping chesed. We're tapping hod. We're tapping mitzach. We're tapping all of these energies. Those are available to us. And now we need to take a biological break.
Yeah.
But he was the issue. David.
So start by this evil originates in divine thought, which eliminates waste before emanating goodness. The demonic is rooted in the divine.
Boy. So if you're a Hindu, you get this completely. Shiva, the destroyer and the creator, it's the same, So the cycle of destruction and creation is the same. So the elimination of waste is the condition for the possibility of something new arising.
So evil's kind of like a laxative.
Well put.
You well, can't talk anymore. No more comments from there.
This sounds like a Trump debate. Look at your hand.
I'm going to call that a heresy. Is that? No, I'm serious. Because out of the heresy, according to the book we're reading, we gain some kind of insight that can reform us back into something that we recognize as positive.
Yeah. The metaphysics, the deepest metaphysics of Christianity is that there could be no darkness, no evil, if God, in fact, did not create the conditions for the possibility of it existing. So, ultimately, God's the source. And so to say humans created evil is not true. The divine created the conditions for the possibility, knowing that this condition would set it up. And that so it was in the divine mind right from the beginning.
Is an evil like a like a quality control system?
Mm-hmm. Well, that, or it's yeah, or a foil against which we have to push. In order to goodness can't actually exist without evil.
That's important.
This is simplistic, but he obviously created Lucifer, and that's always a question that I think people have had. So wait a minute, if you really look into this, why? I mean, did Lucifer come from God? So that's the way I understood it when I read it, was that that's is part of God's creation.
Yeah. Isaiah says, God speaks and Isaiah says, I create good and I create evil. So it's there. If you wanted a biblical text, and people just rail against that, oh, that's just heresy, burn you. It's right here in the Bible, right here in the text.
I don't know, speaking of that, I don't know if you've seen the show Lucifer. It is amazing because they actually get into some of that. And it's your basic TV drama thing. But he is the devil. He's in Los Angeles because he's tired of being in hell.
He's seeing a therapist.
And the last show, he gets into she starts playing with him. She says, "Okay, you say you're the devil. Fine, you're the devil. God created you as a light bearer, he goes off and says." And then he put me in some place and she's trying to teach him that, but you're the balance, you're the this and he's, but it's an interesting theology on television that they're bringing this out as you're supposed to like it.
So interesting. Yeah. So this segues into this. This is called a new book, Christosophic Poems. We have them here. They're $10. It's a new publication. Blake Burleson collected over an anthology, a huge collection, and then he selected out of that collection of poems that had to do with the master being a wisdom teacher. So this is an anthology of wisdom Jesus teaching. And this is divided up into seven or eight sections, which I wrote the commentary on, and then the poems are with it, and I read one of them just a little while ago. And so you might enjoy this, but it has some of this theology in it. It does. It really does. It has, it's like Love Poems from God has this sort of other side, and you go, wait a minute, if I've only been hearing one side, I need to hear the other side. So this is the Sophianic tradition of the teaching of Jesus put into the, filtered through the visions of poets, great poets. And most
and
of
not in this, just exclusively Christian or just
no, no. It's got other poets, but the predominant are Christian. Although there are many others, and Khalil Gibran, Jalal ad-Din Rumi, and I can't remember all of them, but they're it's.
And I'm not sure all the Western poets are necessarily.
Yeah, that's right. And you wonder, hey, that you could be burned for that statement. So I want you to hear know that, and Sally has a, if you're interested in a copy.
Oh yes, she's in charge of that.
She's in charge of that. And I, this is my text, that my book that I brought. This was the basis of our work last semester. In the fall, and I really encourage you to read this if you don't know it. It's called The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible by Charles Eisenstein. And it's just, I've had a number of people say it's the most formative book they've ever read. I don't know if Sam, you feel that way, but...
I've read the Meditations on the Throne, and I've read this one, and I classify them equal in their potency.
Yeah.
What's the name of this one?
It's the More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. And he's so honest about, okay, we're living in this chaos, and yet our hearts know there's something else possible.
Right.
And we're walking towards it, and it's so confusing. And he, as an author, he says, I'm confused. But here's my confusion. And so he's real honest about the confusion and about the steps.
Well, I read it, I think I read it about six times, and as you go back through, I mean, the Meditation of the Throat calls itself a magical incantation.
Right.
And again, I would say that that book is the same kind of thing, because he delineates the story of interbeing.
Yeah.
And to me, for me right now, that is the only source of that.
Right.
To read as a presentation of that state.
Good.
So that's what I was.
So it's an incantation. It's and it's related to what we're doing. It's this is the basis in a certain way of a certain kind of vision. Robin White, who is a friend of Alison Herman's and who lives now up near us. Robin is just she is a very cantankerous lady.
You gotta pay.
Yeah, I gotta pay. And I love her. I love her to death. And she just is my, you know, she, if she doesn't accept something, she'll just, wait a minute. And she's fun to have in a group because she just won't let something go if she doesn't understand it or doesn't agree with it. But she read this book and she said, Len, this is changing my life.
Aww.
And so... And she sent me two or three emails. I'm so glad for this.
Aww.
So I wanted
that's
those
a
of you. It's what?
That's a miracle.
It is a miracle. If you know Robin,
it's a great book. It's a lot easier to read than this.
Oh yeah. It's very easy.
I mean,
very easy. In fact, you can just. And so we used two chapters out of last time, like we're using Daniel Matt this time. And we're going to use a chapter out of the Meditations on the Tarot, which I will send to you when we're ready for Tarot. But we're going to do some other things with the I Ching, with synchronicity, with serendipities and things like that when we get to it. So we have alchemy next time, and then we have Tarot at the last. And there's a lot to do in each one. And I don't know if I'm going to give you an alchemical text, because it's just... It's really a very, very complex world, but we'll get in. Okay. So, back to the latter part of this text. I want us to see this as we go through it. So on page 9, he says that at the center of this, of course, is the beauty of the divine, and what has created the beauty of the divine is all of this of who is, and it's all funneled into the beauty of the divine, and then that scatters out into the human world. And the way it scatters into the human world is through Yesod, the axis, the cosmic pillar, and Shekinah, which is the kingdom. And in the tradition, this is the divine feminine manifestation on earth. So you could make the case that every goddess image. And so this morning we really loved, and it was so great to have Alice do this for us, Allison do this for us. That is Shekinah. That is Shekinah working powerfully on the earth. And this is Yesod. So there's something that those two masculine and feminine characteristics are in fact the what we're working with. We are them. So that when we come to the image, and when 10 arrives, it arrives through the divine feminine. 10 is the divine feminine. It is this feminine energy. So Saint Mary, all of the divine, the entities in across the world that privilege the divine feminine are this Shekhinah. So in the Christian tradition, there is Jesus talks about the bridal chamber. It's a real strong image. And that is the cosmic wedding, the marriage. The ideal time of uniting is on Sabbath rest. So in Sabbath rest comes the uniting. And all of that imagery is a part of this tree, and it's in our Gospels. But we have just lost that because we're so far away from it. These are the organic symbols, he says, the very last paragraph, of spiritual reality beyond our normal comprehension. These are, and I love that, organic spiritual symbols. So, remember Moses saw the tree burning? Well, this is the tree of life that Moses saw, and it is burning, and that is another image of it. So, you are the manifestation of the tree of life, and to the degree that you draw down its energies, those energies live in you. And for you to understand compassion, discernment, beauty, prophecy, all of those, they burn inside of us. It has the capacity to come to life. This diagram is far too sterile. The better image of this diagram would be one of these. That one. Because that same, see the Kabbalistic image at the head? This being is living into that image. Or it's that. So sometimes we need something really, and this is what we mean by beauty. These are beautiful. And they stir our imagination, and that's what the Jewish world wanted to light up the imagination so that we wouldn't get stuck in the mundane. And, you know, we have the impression that the Ten Commandments are just as mundane as you can get. They're like a stick. But the Jewish world said, no, no, no. It's like this. It's like this. It's like this. It's like this. That's the way it is. And that's what's burning in our souls. So, this is the burning tree on page 10. The middle of that paragraph. This started to influence Catholic Christianity. So he mentions this. He says, this started to influence Catholic Christianity, and this became like a burning. It started to ignite. And this is the drama. And then the final paragraphs, he says, this is the drama of the divine manifesting in the world. And this is the process, the ladder of ascent back to our source. From below to above, the Sephirot constitutes a ladder of ascent back to the One. Or about six lines down from that, he says, this is the map of consciousness. So when we put on the board messianic consciousness, wonder if this is the map of messianic consciousness. And this is, we're able to tap this. So spiritual and the mystic climbs and probes and discovers the dimensions of being. Spiritual and psychological wholeness is achieved by what? Meditating on these qualities. By imitating them, by integrating them into one's own self as the attributes of God. When you cleave to the Sephirot, the divine spirit enters into you. Jesus said, I will send you the Holy Spirit. What was he talking about? This. I will send you this. Into every sensation, every movement. But the path is not easy. At page 11, the first paragraph, very end of it. By knowing and withstanding the dark underside of wisdom, the spiritual seeker is refined. There's back to, you know, right hand and left hand possibilities. Then, that's not good enough. At the bottom of the page, he starts talking about the ecstatic Kabbalah. And this is where, on page 12, he talks about Abu Lafia, Ibrahim Abu Lafia. And Ibrahim Abu Lafia was a mystic of the 13th century. And he traveled all over the Europe and the Middle East. And he almost got killed. In fact, he tried to meet with the Pope, and the Pope almost had him killed. And the Pope died, fortunately. And so Abu Lafia lived. But notice at the middle paragraph, the bottom of the middle paragraph, as the highest form of this meditation, remember we're talking about meditation, Abu Lafia recommends jumping or skipping, which is a type of free association between various combinations of letters guided by fairly lax rules, this thereby expanding our consciousness. So this is called the ecstatic Kabbalah. So they were practicing what Sufis practice, which was a kind of ecstatic experience. So, and then he goes on at the top of page 13 to say, oh, this was a part, this was built into the Sufi world as well. So on the page before, he said this started to influence the Catholic world. We had a whole group of mystics that got religion, and they became charismatic in that certain sense, and this influenced, he says, ultimately the Sufi world. I think that's all, except on the last page, page 17, there's other things I've skipped, but people like William Blake, Leibniz, who was a philosopher and a visionary, Emanuel Swedenborg and William Blake, Jacques Derrida, Louis Borges, Franz Kafka, and so forth, were influenced by this teacher. So we have a lot of our sort of ancestors, modern spiritual ancestors, like Swedenborg and Blake, for example, that many of you do know, that were influenced by this teaching. And they were meditators on the Kabbalah. So we can see this lineage stretching way, way back to Ezekiel and his visions, all the way through Yeshua, all the way through, it eventually enters into Sufi tradition and it comes into the Christian world over and over again. So we kind of reject it and then we get it back. And so what we're doing in this seminar is to say, okay, now pay attention. I took one, on the last page, I took one chapter, just one, out of the collection, the anthology, and this is a kind of explanation, a beautiful, quick explanation of these various images that we've been looking at in the tree of life. So this, if now that you know the tree, now that you see that this is the great Native American axis, this is the great Indian axis, this is the great Mayan axis, this is the Islamic axis, it's just every single place. And the Jewish world said, we're going to explore the branches of the tree, we're going to explore all of its fruit, we're going to explore what the divine energies are doing in it, because they're inside of us. We are deeply related to this tree. And so I'm just pointing this out, I'm not going to read it now. But the very last two paragraphs on page 77. Yeah, it's the last paragraph here. Yeah, very last paragraph. I am the one who planted this tree for all the world to delight in. With it, I span the all, calling it all. For all depends on it, all emanates from it, all needs it. All gaze upon it and await it. From here, souls fly forth in joy. Alone I was when I made it, when I spread out my earth in which I planted and rooted this tree, giving them joy in one another, rejoicing along with them. Who was with me? To whom could I reveal the secret of my... And then the answer is to you. Mm-hmm. So I planted this with joy because this is me, and I planted it so you would know me, and I planted... it's so that you would enjoy the tree and that you would fly in joy from its many branches. So Yeshua says, the tiny mustard seed, it's planted, it becomes a great tree in which the angels fly. So Yeshua is talking about the cosmic tree. And we haven't made that connection. He was drawing material from this imagery. Yeah.
So I noticed too on Shekinah, they have Malkut, the kingdom. So when Jesus is talking about the kingdom of heaven,
yes,
he's talking about that.
Well, at least entering it that way. So that's one of the difficulties with the Western tradition. We stripped out all the female imagery, or we just didn't pay attention. Either deliberately, it was willful ignorance, or it was just unwillful ignorance.
So we entered the kingdom again.
Yeah, we enter it. Yeah, we enter into her presence, and so that's why Philip is so interesting, and Mary Magdalene is so, and Thomas, because Thomas, Yeshua says you've got to marry the two. You've got to enter the bridal chamber, and the two need to be married, and then all of the imagery in Mary Magdalene is about the struggle of that, and then Philip is about the alchemy of that. How do you do that? How do you in temple? Didn't you use the word in temple?
In temple.
In temple. How do you in temple this? How do you enter her temple? Remember, she is the one with the temple. Mm-hmm. In Proverbs, I have raised my seven pillars, and I send out prophetically the voices. Come, come into my temple. Come into my temple. See, all of our tradition was alive with this. So when we say, oh, the native tradition, these shamans have so many powers, and we don't. We don't. We do. Let's use them. Let's not be afraid of them. So how many of you drew from Tefillah today? And Hesed and Hod and Binah and Chochmah and Netzach. You know, could you say, oh, today I want to access that. In this situation, I need to access that. It'd be interesting to meditate on it enough that you were familiar with what's that energy feel like? When I enter the field of that energy, what is it like? When I enter the divine personality, what does it feel like? So, this is just to ignite our imagination.